athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
Thank you for joining me on another edition of Box to Row. It is our look at the world of sports and at the world of HBCU sports. And look, speaking of HBCU sports, and in particular and specifically HBCU football, another year without a single HBCU player being drafted into the National Football League. That makes the second time in 4 years that this has happened. Yet, you have multiple undrafted free agents that are going to sign contracts. And if history is any indicator, you're going to have multiple HBCU players that will sign or that will be on opening day rosters. In any given year, in terms of opening day rosters and HBCU players being on those opening day rosters, 30 to 40% of those players are undrafted free agents. So the league just refuses to draft HBCU players. And I've got some thoughts on this. And look, you know, hopefully you can stick around for the entire program because we've got a good show for you today, as a matter of fact, here on Box to Row. As a matter of fact, Jonathan Hernandez, the head baseball coach at Bethune-Cookman, going to join us on the program. But in the event, because I'm going to talk about this a little bit later on in the program, as a matter of fact, in the next segment, about the lack of HBCU players. And look, it's beyond that at this point. Like, I've got a column that's up on BoxToRow.com that I'd invite you to take a look at. But, you know, I wanted to go beyond just the lack of HBCU football players being drafted, because wrote a column about that last year, wrote one in 2022, wrote one in 2021, wrote one in 2020, and even beyond that. So it's more than just that. But I'd invite you to go to the website, BoxToRow.com, if you want to know my thoughts, if you're not going to have an opportunity to listen to this entire program. Otherwise, I'm going to touch on this in the next segment. So if you can stick around, that would be absolutely great. Look, we've got NBA playoff talk here on the program. Look, I the series, and give the Knicks credit. Like, the 76ers fought. Give the Knicks a lot of credit. I thought that the 76ers may win this series. I think if Joel Embiid is healthy, then I think it's a different series. I thought that the 76ers would win it, but I think it's a series that probably would have gone seven games. I think if you look at game two and game five, cancel each other out because of the way in which each of the teams won those particular games. You remember the Knicks were down, 5 points in the last whatever seconds it was, came back, forced overtime, ended up winning that game. In game five, the 76ers were down 6 points with, I think, a little bit more than 30 seconds remaining. You get a controversial 4-point play. I mean, and look, that's the thing. It was controversy in both of those games because the league, and I don't know why. Look, I understand being transparent. Like, that's okay. Like, you want to be transparent, right? But, you know, like in the PR world, like you don't tell everything. You know, they say good, all publicity is good publicity. Well, not necessarily. I mean, yes and no. It depends upon what the topic of conversation is. And the league releases these reports within, I think it's the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter, the calls that may have been missed. And in games 2 and 5, calls were missed. I wouldn't be in the business of just releasing these things, because in game 2, it was said that when Maxey got that rebound or the pass, I think it was a pass that came to him, he was fouled, hit the deck, there was no call. Then in game 5, they say Maxey traveled, a travel should have been called on the 4-point play. And when you slow it down, it definitely, I mean, it took like 4 steps. You know, so whatever, right? Those 2 games canceled themselves out. Again, I think if Joel Embiid is more healthy, then it's a different game. And look, you've got nothing. And I talked about this last week, and I thought some of the players that would have an impact for the 76ers, I mean, it just didn't really, really come to fruition. You know, Kyle Lowry had, you know, a couple of games where he was good. Buddy Hield was good in game 6, but he didn't even play the previous 2 games, okay? You look at, you know, Oubre was pretty consistent. Oubre was pretty consistent. He was a pretty consistent player for the 76ers. And then, I mean, Tobias Harris, you got absolutely nothing from Tobias Harris. I think if Harris plays, gives you anything, then it's a bit of a different series, even with the Embiid injury. And if Embiid is healthy, I think it's a different series. I think we're playing a game 7, because I'm not going to take anything away from the Knicks. The Knicks were absolutely spectacular. I mean, Brunson goes for 41 in game 6. He had what? He had like a 47-point outburst. He had 39 points. He had another 40-point. Like, Jalen Brunson is absolutely unbelievable. But I thought, and there were some others, you know, Anunoby hit some big shots. He hasn't been the impact player that I thought he may be coming to the Knicks. That said, they couldn't do this without him. Okay, no doubt about that. You know, DiVincenzo has been really, really good. You've got some other, you know, Robinson, McBride has hit some shots. Hartenstein, I think Hartenstein has been really, really key, especially from a defensive and rebounding perspective, where the Knicks absolutely dominated in terms of rebounding and really second chance points, as it was very much glaring in game 6. And by the way, I mean, look, I thought the Knicks were going to blow the 76ers out of their own arena. 76ers come all the way back, have even a 10-point lead in the second half and couldn't hold it. But the one guy that I thought was the key that we're not talking about enough for me, because you may say, well, he's been streaky. Josh Hart hit some really, really big shots throughout the course of this series. And not only big shots, big three-pointers throughout the course of this series. I thought Josh Hart, I think if you don't have Josh Hart, you'd lose that series. DiVincenzo, we know what he is. He's going to do his thing. Maybe he had a game or two he wasn't great, but for the most part he was. I mean, Jalen Brunson, I mean, obviously you're not going to win the series without Jalen Brunson, but you know what I mean in terms of an impact player. Josh Hart was that guy for the Knicks, I think, throughout the course of this series. And with the Knicks win, because now the Knicks are going to play the Pacers, I think the Knicks, I'm not saying that the Knicks are going to win this series against the Pacers. I'm not, you know, the Pacers are solid. I'm not overly impressed. I think when you look at the Bucks were really injured. And what's interesting is the Bucks able to win a game from the Pacers without Damian Lillard and Antetokounmpo in one game. Still kind of blew them out. So I wasn't necessarily – I think Halliburton's really, really good. There's no doubt about that. But you know, that three-point shot he's got can be kind of streaky sometimes from a pure point guard perspective. He's going to run the show. I don't know if the Pacers have enough scoring to outdo the Knicks. In other words, if the Knicks play like the Knicks played against the 76ers, I don't think the Pacers are going to win this series. But if the Knicks have a bit of a drop-off, let's say Jalen Brunson's not as big, let's say Hart doesn't hit as many big shots as he's hit, let's say DiVincenzo has, you know, three bad games, depending upon how long the series goes, then I think it's definitely going to be an uphill battle for the Knicks. But I don't expect that to happen. And I think we'll see the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals. Speaking of the Pacers, you know, Doc Rivers, he gets off the hook in this situation, because if Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard had been healthy and the Bucks had still lost that series, I mean, what a disaster that would have been. Would you have brought Doc Rivers back? I mean, you signed him to a three-year deal. Like, that was the whole thing. And I know I've been talking about this for the last several weeks. I know I talked about it when it initially happened. But Doc Rivers just doesn't have it anymore. I don't see where he has it anymore. And you can say you can't fully judge him based upon this series because of the injuries to both Antetokounmpo and Lillard. But then again, that's just a cop-out as far as I'm concerned, right? Like, that lets Doc Rivers off the hook a little bit. You have to let him off the hook, because you can say, well, for me looking at it and having watched and knowing the history of Doc Rivers and coaching teams, and I can't even understand. I still don't understand why the Pacers or the Bucks hired Doc Rivers in the first place, replacing previous coach's name is escaping me. But like, the Bucks didn't do any better than with Doc Rivers than before, and I don't think it was getting any worse. But maybe, you know, maybe there was some friction there between the coach and Adrian Griffin. Maybe there was some dissension there and so forth. Maybe even with Lillard, who knows? But definitely, Doc Rivers gets off the hook. We've got a lot more of Box to Row on the other side. I'm talking about the lack of HBCU players drafted in the NFL draft. Next.
More of Box to Row with Donald Ware is on the way.
Do you feel like the cost of car ownership has gotten out of control? Take charge by refinancing your auto loan today. One call to Rate Genius can save drivers an average of $1,200 per year. The loan specialists at Rate Genius have helped people for more than 20 years replace high-interest auto loans, lower their payments, and spend less in interest. Rate Genius works with over 150 lenders to find you the most competitive terms. Customers lower their rate an average of 3 percentage points. That's huge savings. It's absolutely free to apply for refinance through Rate Genius, and when you refinance your auto loan, you won't owe a payment for 45 days. Make the 5-minute no obligation call today and get on your way toward affordable car ownership. Call 800-958-0341. 800-958-0341. That's 800-958-0341. Rate and payment values are calculated by using the average savings for customers from January 1st, 2022 through December 31st, 2022. Not all applicants qualify for a loan or rate savings. Actual offer terms, including APR, are determined at the time of your application based on credit worthiness. Value of the vehicle on term and other.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
That Daniels could be Lamar Jackson 2.0. I mean, everybody talked about Lamar Jackson and the Ravens traded up to get him. I couldn't believe all of the people that were talking about, well, they didn't know if his game was going to translate into the National Football League. Did you watch him play at Louisville? If you watched him play, you could see that, and he's transformed in a lot of respects the quarterback position in the National Football League. Well, if Jaden Daniels is the next version, that is an infusion that Washington needs.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports, and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
Now, back to From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Welcome back to Box to Row. You can participate in the conversation. Hit me up via X at Box to Row, BOXTOROW, or on Facebook, BOX2ROW. You can also hit me up on X on my Twitter, my personal X account, or Twitter, at DWare1, at DWare1. So another National Football League draft without a single HBCU player taken. And that makes the second time in the last 4 years that's happened. You have to go all the way back to like the 50s before a couple of years ago when there was not a single player taken in the National Football League draft. Zero. Zilch. Nada. Okay, think about that. All of the greatness of HBCU football over the years, all of the greatness of HBCUs, and not a single player, not a single HBCU player taken in the National Football League draft. As a matter of fact, you think about the last couple of years, you only had one player that was taken last year. You had, four a couple of years before that. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous, really, okay, is what it is. And look, teams can pick the players that they feel like are going to help their team. The problem is, this is the problem that I've had and have always had with that particular philosophy. I mean, it's fine. You're going to draft who you want to draft. But in any given year, when you look at the opening day rosters, 30 to 40% of the players that are HBCU players are undrafted players, meaning that the league would rather sign these guys as undrafted free agents and allow them to make the team that way, opposed to a structure where you get paid. In other words, when you get drafted, there is some kind of guaranteed money. Now, you can get some money when you're drafted and or when you're not drafted, if you sign as an undrafted free agent, you can get some money. And I think, you know, you have the freedom, more of the freedom, to go to the team that makes the most sense for you. That's fine. But when you're talking about in the early parts of the 2000, when you had, in upwards of 13 players being drafted, you had first round players being drafted. Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, when I think back to the 2008 season, drafted in the first round. And it's like, you know, how did we get from there to where we are now? I mean, how did we get to this point? And it's really quite disappointing. I went on there's a podcast called the HBCU Huddle Podcast. It's a great podcast. It's part of the family of Grind City Media, which is the official website or the official entity in terms of website, media, et cetera, of the Memphis Grizzlies. You know, Mike Wallace, who comes on this program quite often, he talks NBA on this program. Okay. And CJ, also, they host this podcast. It's really, really good. The player that I couldn't think about, Titus Howard, was drafted back in 2019 in the first round by the Texans. And again, you see that guys, you know, when they have the opportunity, they're going to make the most of it. I mean, Titus Howard has really been solid, okay? You know, it's a situation where we go from those players being drafted, and they asked me, you know, what would make this satisfactory as far as I was concerned in terms of HBCU players being drafted? What would that number look like? And for me, I said, if you if if there are 6 to 8 players that are drafted, then you're making some progress. Because again, going back a couple of years ago, you had 4 players drafted after having 0 players being drafted. And by the way, after those 0 players were drafted, Troy Vincent, you know, he's a VP with the NFL office. I think it's for operations. You know, he wrote an op-ed in the Fayetteville Observer. And because remember, that was the year, the 4 players that got drafted, that was 2022. That was the year that Joshua Williams from Fayetteville State got drafted. And he was the first draft pick of HBCUs off the board. And that was by the Kansas City Chiefs. He has since won 2 Super Bowls. But he wrote an op-ed almost in a braggadocious kind of manner because the league had gone from drafting 0 players in 2021 to drafting 4 players in 2022. And so it was almost almost like a braggadocious type of deal, right? And look, I get it. Like, the league has tried to do some things. You've got the Legacy Bowl. You know, you've got these features. Steve Weich does an excellent job. Steve Weich of NFL Network comes on this program from time to time to talk some National Football League. You know, he's in the trenches. He's doing, you know, a lot more as it relates to HBCU players. And, you know, as a Howard grad, he definitely understands that. But it's not enough. And look, I think at this point, we're beyond talking about players being drafted, right? Like, we're beyond that. I've written, and as a matter of fact, my latest piece is on BoxToRow.com, and you can check that out on the BoxToRow.com website in terms of my thoughts. I kind of stayed away from the draft part of it, right? Because we've been down that road. We know what that looks like. They're not drafting HBCU players, even though, again, look, somebody may come and say, well, you know, it is the team's prerogative to draft who the team wants to draft. Okay. And if that doesn't include HBCU players, that's fine. Someone may come to me and say that. But again, I will retort that 30 to 40% of player HBCU players that make rosters on opening day in any given year are undrafted free agents. So you can't tell me that they can't be drafted. Okay. Again, beyond writing about that, it's bigger than that, you know, for me. Okay. When it comes to the National Football League, its draft, and HBCU players. You know, there's some other things that I would point to, right? You know, the NFL has an quote unquote, an HBCU policy, but it's really a situation where it's in its operational side of things for the NFL, and it includes HBCUs. And I would invite you to Google HBCUs and NFL, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. And the league talks about what it does and partnerships and all those kinds of things that it has with HBCUs. Interesting. Okay, let's step outside of football, right? Let's look at the broadcast part of this thing, right? There are 32 teams in the National Football League. None of those 32 teams have play-by-play people, okay, that have ties to HBCU, not even ties to HBCU, that are HBCU alums. Okay, in a broadcast, you have the play-by-play, you'll have the color analyst, you may have 2 color analysts, and then you'll generally also have a sideline reporter. And I'm not sure about the color analysts. I'm not sure about the sideline reporters. Maybe. I don't know that. But from a play-by-play standpoint, 0 are NFL alums. And by the way, none are black either. Okay? And it's interesting because I was looking at one of the prerequisites for one of the teams. I'm not going to mention this team. Where they were looking or are currently looking for a play-by-play person, radio person. But one of the prerequisites was that you had to have, quote unquote, big time school experience. Well, how do you get that experience, okay, when the so-called big schools aren't even hiring those that are HBCU alums either? How do you get that experience? Okay. That's number one. You know, we've got our own personal, for lack of a better word, connection. I wouldn't even call it that, but for lack of a better word, for these purposes, with the National Football League, in that 2007, 2008, 2009, Box to Row broadcast from Radio Row at the Super Bowl. And in 2009, was credentialed to cover the Super Bowl in Tampa. It was absolutely fantastic. From 2010 till I would say about 2019, our credential request was denied each and every year thereafter. Various reasons popped up. To this day, I still have no idea why we are not covering the Super Bowl is one thing. If you want to, you want to be denied, not credential. Everybody can't cover the Super Bowl. You've got the venues that are 80,000. You want to have, you can't comp everybody. Okay, I'm all right with that. But not to even be on Radio Row, where this show, by the way, as you know, is a national program on Sirius XM and stations all across the country, including 8 National Football League markets. You mean to tell me that's a program that doesn't qualify to air its show on Radio Row? And by the way, I would also ask, you say you have a partnership, the National Football League, with HBCUs. You do. Okay. How's that? I mean, the partnership that you could have are with the schools. Okay. Really? So how many of those entities that you grant credentials for are HBCU or focus on HBCU use, HBCU football, whatever the case may be? See, these things are tied into each other in a lot of respects. Okay. Look, we've got one general manager, and Brad Holmes has done an absolutely tremendous job with the Detroit Lions. He's a grad of A&T. And he goes to show that if given the opportunity, people will succeed. Look, I'm up against the break. I want to talk a little bit more about this, and we'll do that in the last segment, because up next here on Box to Row, Bethune-Cookman head baseball coach Jonathan Hernandez.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
I'm excited I get to play for them. They support us in everything we do. You know, it's a joy to, go to work and know that you're going to be, they're going to cheer for you as loud as they can, no matter who you're playing.
Michael B. Jordan.
And I think it's a testament to, what HBCUs mean to people. And having that community and culture and shining a light on the universities, in a real way, and creating a pipeline from these kids in high school and making them feel good about wanting to land at HBCU. We have high talent. And often it's gone and shipped out to other places. It's never poured back into the community. So if we can create an environment that's cool and a beacon of light, and people want to feel like they want to be here. And so putting it on a national stage is really big. Most of the time these kids don't get televised games, So be able to put them on Turner in a real way was really, really important. And then the brands and then the sponsors, and getting, the NBA, scouts and looks to come in and hopefully build this thing bigger.
The one and only Stephen A. Smith.
It's my sincere hope that when my ride ends, I'll get a big hug and a big thank you for what I tried to do for other people when I was at the top. Because that's all you have to lean on at the end of the day, bro. I mean, I plan on being successful for years to come, but it ain't gonna last forever. And, when my day comes, when it's the end of the road and it's time for somebody else to be in my seat, in my chair, it's my hope that whoever that person or those people are, people that knew I cared about them and believed in them to help them get to this place.
Hey, Spike Lee.
Thank you. I haven't heard that. I mean, I've been on radios all over the nation. Thank you for that question. I'm a third generation Morehouse man. I was taught to speak your truth, and that there's very special about being a Morehouse man, the same way you feel about your school, the same way we feel all about our respective historic black colleges. That would have been my first choice anyway, and I'm proud to be a Morehouse man.
I'm talking about none other than Serena Williams.
That was definitely one of the better matches I've ever played. I've had it just like that. You know, I was really focused, just really, you know, excited.
That is the voice of Steph Curry.
Your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson. And, it's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
The one and only Michael Strahan.
Always good to talk to you. Hopefully next time it won't be, what, 14 years. You can get to it. You know what is good, and you're encouraging people to be better and do better, and that's what I love, man. So thank you. I appreciate you.
As we're joined by the one and only Jerry Rice. What do you remember most about those days at Mississippi Valley State?
What is going on at Mississippi Valley State University? Why are these guys putting up unbelievable numbers? And that brought awareness to the school, and after that, I got drafted to the San Francisco 49ers.
Dave Roberts, manager of the L.A. Dodgers. To be person of color and be the manager of the Dodgers, what does that mean to you?
I think the first thing that comes to me is responsibility. With recency and kind of the racial issues that we're having that have really come to light, which is, I believe, are good things. I think that it's a responsibility for me to be the first manager of color for the Dodgers. There's not many of us in baseball to do things the right way, to hopefully give other people of color opportunity. Hopefully it just paves the way. So I think that for me, I definitely look at it as responsibility, but something I'm willing to undertake.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
Oh, man, thank you for having me play in a real way. I mean, I'm so honored. UW Football League has done so many wonders. We got over 200 kids that have graduated from high school. We have over 50 kids that have grown at Division I.
NBA All-Star Chris Paul.
That was great to bring it back to Winston-Salem State University, a black college. Something that my city had never seen before, may never see again, and just having a up close and personal feeling with LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Melo. It was exciting. I'm grateful for those guys coming out.
Kyrie Irving.
Playing at Duke for Coach K. What was that like and how that prepared you for the league now?
Playing 11 games, you know, a lot of people think that's not a big package for you to become a better player, but for me it was. Playing for Coach K, he gave me the keys to the car and I was driving it in the first 8 games. And, you know, being a part of something special like that and having a brotherhood built at an institution such as that one is an experience that you never forget.
Ice Cube has been our guest.
Hey man, thanks for letting me talk a little music, movies, and sports. Hey, my favorite three topics.
Hey, y'all. It is the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best on Box to Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's From the Press Box to Press Row, real, relevant radio. All right, let's continue here on Box to Row, joined by a gentleman in his sixth season as the head baseball coach at Bethune-Cookman. The Rattlers are 25-20 on the season. As a matter of fact, ranked number 2 in the BlackCollegeBaseball.com poll on the road for the rivalry game against Florida A&M this weekend. As a matter of fact, the last time the two teams met, the Wildcats took 2 of 3 from the Rattlers. Jonathan Hernandez, again in his sixth season as the head baseball coach at Bethune-Cookman, joins us here on the program. What's going on, Coach Hernandez?
All good. You know, just, you know, looking forward to, you know, obviously down the stretch, you know, 3 series left. But what's in front of us is an opportunity to, you know, play against a really good baseball program over at Florida A&M.
25-20 on the season again, Florida A&M on the horizon. Your thoughts on the way your team has played to this point in the season?
I think it's been fine. You know, we're, you know, every year we want to see growth. You know, we want to see that within our program. And I think we've done that the last couple of years, especially, you know, joining the SWAC. So, you know, looking forward to every year putting a competitive, you know, quality talent out on the field to give us an opportunity to position ourselves for, you know, obviously the stretch run and, you know, hopefully make a run at this in Atlanta at the SWAC tournament. But pleased with how we're playing so far.
The SWAC, just talk about SWAC baseball. Like I mentioned, you took 2 of 3 from Florida A&M. Jackson State took 2 of 3 from you. And then I believe, fam, you took 2 of 3 from Jackson. Like, it's crazy in the SWAC.
It is, you know, there's a lot of parity, you know, and I think that, you know, the coaches have done a phenomenal job, not only recruiting the student athletes to make the SWAC competitive, but also the overall development of the student athletes on the field and off the field to make, you know, SWAC baseball very interesting. You know, I've said it from, you know, the start that we got here, we can't take a weekend off. I mean, you look at last weekend, surprisingly, you know, to others, but, you know, Alabama A&M took two or three from us, you know, and they've got a couple of weekend wins as well. So, you know, just a parity of the league, but that's also the job that all the head coaches, the assistant coaches that work alongside the head coaches and the student athletes to continue to push the SWAC baseball conference forward, you know, on a national scale. And, you know, it's really good baseball all the way around.
You know, you're getting the program back to where it once was. I know, you know, transitioning sort of in your first season, but you've, you know, had a good season last year. I mean, to be able to lose in the first round of the SWAC tournament, I think you won, what, three or four straight games. You ultimately lost to Florida A&M. But, you know, I mean, I think obviously it's really good. Does it seem like it's been six seasons?
It definitely doesn't feel that way. It just feels like, you know, the other day I was getting the phone call letting them know that I was going to, you know, or I got selected to become the head coach here at Bethune. You know, you look at the pandemic, how it affected everybody. But then 21, the athletic department and the university opted out of athletics. So, you know, it's been 6 years, you know, coaching the fourth, you know, I guess full season here at Bethune. It's been surreal. It's been awesome. You know, but none of this is possible without the support of the assistant coaches that we have on board, our student athletes that are buying into the vision, and also the athletic administrators, you know, that we currently have at Bethune and who were here when I first got hired to align themselves with the vision of our program and where we want to take this. So all of this is not possible without the support of those, you know, people that we've surrounded our programs with the last couple of years.
Jonathan Hernandez, in his sixth season as the head baseball coach at Bethune-Cookman, he joins us here on Box to Row. You've had some nice wins this year, maybe none nicer, maybe, than the victory over Miami back on April the 17th, you know, at Miami 6-4. It's a good college baseball game, a 6-4 score. Your thoughts and what that victory meant? I'm sure you've had some other big victories, but this may be one of your bigger victories since you've been the head coach there at Bethune-Cookman.
Yeah, you know, it started actually back in, you know, 2019, where, you know, it was my first year and we took two from Boston College, took two from Ohio State. You know, just kind of getting back to that, where we want to be able to not only, you know, have success on the weekends, but put ourselves in a position to have success in the midweek games. And, you know, we've done that throughout the course of the year. But like you said, nothing sweeter than, you know, me being born and raised down in Hialeah, Florida, just 20 minutes outside of Miami, you know, going to Mark Light Field when I was younger, watching the Hurricanes play, to then, you know, go back to a place where I grew up watching college baseball and taking a team and, you know, being able to accomplish one of, you know, my own personal goals is, you know, to get a win against a Power Five program on a midweek. Nevertheless, how special is it to do it when you're able to go back home in front of, you know, your family and your friends and at a ballpark that has such, you know, so much history there in the 305 and come out with a victory? And I think it gave our players and our coaches and just the university just a synopsis of, hey, like, we can do this. We just got to pull the right way and just got to continue to play our brand of baseball. And anything can happen any given day. We just need to get an opportunity to do what we do. And, you know, our guys did a phenomenal job, not only that game, but, you know, the whole season so far. But nevertheless, nothing sweeter than being able to go back home and share that memory with so many family and friends down in Miami.
You've had some nice wins. You know, you start the season out with taking two of three from Stonehill. Maine, you take two of three. You've gotten victories over FIU. You've gotten victories over Jacksonville. And most of those games, at least the single games, are midweek games. How much of it's about the conference and it's about winning the conference, and the way to get to regional play is by, if you're in the SWAC, as it stands right now, is by winning the conference. However, how much emphasis do you place on midweek games?
I think that you're absolutely correct. You know, first and foremost, we have to take care of business on the weekends. But, you know, the last 3 years that we've been involved in the SWAC, it finds a way to, you know, that fourth starter, right? Your midweek starter at some point is going to have to pitch in that conference tournament. So we want to put ourselves in a situation where whoever we throw out there, if we're fortunate enough to get that far into the tournament, where our midweek starter is going to be able to provide quality innings for us, not only at the SWAC tournament, but also in our midweek games. Again, being in Florida with the tough non-conference matchups that we do have in our midweek games, you know, that also assists in recruiting, right? If we're able to put a quality product out on the field and we're getting these big wins, it also, you know, allows ourselves to recruit a player that maybe would have never given Bethune-Cookman a chance before, just based on the schedule and the success that we've been having, not only in our conference and in our weekends, but also our midweek non-conference games. So I think that it opens up a door that maybe wasn't opened a couple of years ago, with players now having, you know, the ability to come to a Bethune-Cookman to compete against the best competition, not only in the state, but in the country, and as well as playing a competitive league like it is in the SWAC.
Tanner, is it Bocabello, your pitcher?
Bocabello.
I mean, you look at his numbers, he's got a 2-3 ERA, 6-1 on the season. He's got 55 strikeouts. The numbers suggest that he's been really good for you. How good for you has he, in fact, been?
He's been really good. And again, it's very tough for a program like ours to replace a guy that we had last year, Nolan Santos, who was drafted in the 7th round by the Minnesota Twins. So those are some big shoes to fill in its own. And, you know, Boca's done a really good job stepping in that role and thriving in that role. You know, he's a team first type guy. He's a competitor. Very rarely wants to be taken out of a game. And the numbers do align with what you mentioned about him being that good for us. You know, I think he's only has one loss on the year. He could easily have an extra, you know, 2 or 3 wins on the season, just some starts that, you know, he left the game where we were winning and we just, you know, didn't capitalize or didn't finish ball games. But, you know, he's been very good for us, not only on the field, but, you know, just with the overall pitching staff, being a junior college transfer from St. Pete, has the experience to pitch in big games. You know, junior college baseball is really good here, but, you know, definitely a guy that has filled the shoes so far of Nolan Santos, who was with us for the last couple of years and now is with the Minnesota Twins organization.
From a hitting standpoint, Jose Gonzalez, I mean, the numbers jump off, .358 average amongst the leaders, if not leading. The SWAC hits for power. He's got 4 home runs. He's got 4 triples. He's got 7 doubles. He's got a slugging percentage of .528. What has he meant to this team and in particular this offense?
I think he's meant a lot. You know, again, you look at last year, a guy that we lost, you know, to professional baseball, Highland Hall, what he meant to our program. You know, now he's playing professionally. You know, to bring in a guy to kind of step in and somewhat fill those shoes, it's tough. It's tough to identify and evaluate those type of guys. But when you give them an opportunity, you know, all we can do is see what they can do with it. And he's done well. You know, he's a grad transfer from an NAIA program over at Ave Maria University, which arguably plays in the toughest NAIA conference in the country. So, you know, he has a history of putting up some big numbers. And, you know, he's made the transition from NAIA to Division I, as you alluded to the stats, you know, very well. So, again, just his veteran leadership, his presence, his ability to help others out and understand what we're trying to do as an offense, he's embraced it. And, you know, just looking forward for him to continue the momentum as we, you know, go down this final stretch run here in the SWAC regular season.
Last thought, as we're joined by Jonathan Hernandez, the head baseball coach at Bethune-Cookman, and we appreciate the time. It's sort of a twofold question. I mean, the bottom line is this weekend, the matchup at Florida A&M, if you take two of three from the Rattlers, you all would be tied. But really, you'd have the head-to-head advantage having already taken 2 of 3 from them. What is it going to take to win the series? And then can you speak to this really good rivalry? They're rivals in all sports, and baseball is no different.
I think it's cliche as it sounds. We just got to take it, you know, one game at a time, one pitch at a time, one inning at a time. You know, you can't let the highs get too high and the lows get too low, especially in a series where there's going to be some emotion behind it because, like you mentioned, of the rivalry, right, between the Rattlers and the Wildcats. I think that we just got to stay true to who we are as an offense. You know, if you look at, you know, what we've been able to do offensively the whole year, We don't slug like the majority of the SWAC schools, but we do put pressure on the defense. And I think we're third or fourth nationally in stolen bases. So that's something that we're going to continue to do. And we're not going to change, you know, who we are as an offense. And I think with the pitching that's been doing well for us, we just got to keep those bats at bay. You know, it seems like right after our series at Daytona, FAMU has just gone on an offensive barrage the last couple of weeks. So it's our job to keep that ball in the ballpark and execute the pitches that we need to. And again, we just got to be fundamentally sound. You know, Jamie does a really good job, you know, over there at FAMU, just making sure that their teams aren't going to make mistakes. But if those opportunities arise, then we have to be able to capitalize it, especially being on the road at a hostile environment here at FAMU. As far as like the rivalry, it's again, anytime you get a Wildcat and a Rattler in any sport competition, it could be checkers or it could be in a debate. You know, things are going to pop off, but that's, again, that's just the beauty about, you know, playing this game and having, you know, us represent Bethune and them over there, you know, represent the orange and green. It's just going to be set up for a really good weekend. It's probably going to be the most watched SWAC, you know, I guess, weekend series so far, because you are right. We're just right there, two games back from FAMU in first place. But for us, it's just to make sure we continue to play our brand of baseball, not make mistakes, capitalize when the opportunities arise, and just get out of this as healthy as we can at it. So we have another 2 weeks of, you know, SWAC play to pay attention to once this weekend is over. But right now, our focus is how are we going to be able to collectively as a group be consistent in our routines and our habits to be able to go 1-0 on Friday. We'll worry about Saturday when it gets here. But right now, all, you know, everything's on deck for Friday, you know, 5 o'clock here in Tallahassee.
Jonathan Hernandez, again in his sixth season as the head baseball coach at Bethune-Cookman, joining us here on the program. The Wildcats ranked number 2 in the blackcollegebaseball.com poll, as you heard, on the road this weekend in an important series against Florida A&M. Coach Hernandez, we appreciate the time. Continued success to you and the Wildcats.
Thank you very much. Hail Wildcats.
Appreciate it, Coach Hernandez. We've got more of Box to Row on the other side. Keep it locked.
If you have diabetes, listen up. If you have insurance, you can qualify for a continuous glucose monitor. With a CGM, you can continuously track your levels and trends and spend more time in range, significantly lowering your A1C. More importantly, a CGM eliminates the one thing most people with diabetes hate, painful finger sticks. Order your new continuous glucose monitor today. If you use insulin and if you've seen your diabetes care provider within the last 6 months, you may qualify for your own CGM right now. We'll do all the insurance paperwork and deliver your new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost to you. Medicare and most insurances will cover your CGM, so don't wait. Have your insurance handy and call the Aptiva Medical CGM Health Hotline right now.
800-946-6813. 800-946-6813. 800-946-6813. That's 800-946-6813.
It's Donald Ware from the Press Box to Press Row.
We're back here on Box to Row. We're talking about the lack of HBCU players being drafted in this particular NFL draft. 0 players from HBCUs were drafted this year into the National Football League. And I was talking about, you know, we're beyond talking about that and writing about that. I've written about that for the previous 3 or 4 years and even before that, in terms of the lack of players being drafted into the National Football League. We're beyond that. You know, let's talk about some other things. Let's talk about the lack of HBCU play-by-play radio people, okay, in any of the 32 teams. Let's talk about this entity. And, you know, normally I don't – if you've listened to this program – I don't come on here and talk about necessarily things that, you know, have happened or whatever, how we may have been wronged and all that. I don't get into all of that because it's not about, in particular, me. It's just not. But I'm just giving you an example of how an HBCU entity, HBCU owned, HBCU host, HBCU talk, you know, of course, we talk everything. I mean, we talk all sports, right? Not just HBCU. We talk all sports, talk with entertainers and the like, all of that kind of stuff. And you mean to tell me an entity like that isn't invited on Radio Row during the Super Bowl? I mean, you know, sometimes people look at things differently, right? And if you look, if somebody looks at that, they may say, well, you got all of these other shows, right? All, whether they're national shows, whether they're local shows, it's all good, right? Pound for pound, and even beyond pound for pound, okay? You know, Box to Row can roll with any show, talk sports. The difference is we're going to talk some HBCU sports that the other shows can't talk. That's the difference. That's the big difference. You mean to tell me a show like that isn't on Radio Row? And look, everybody wants to attach themselves, and all these entities want to attach themselves to HBCUs now. HBCUs are the hot thing. And the National Football League with its HBCU policy, blah, 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 all of that kind of stuff with its Legacy Bowl. Well, good for you. You've weaseled your way into the HBCU space. Congratulations, National Football League. Much like the NBA with this NBA HBCU Classic. Notice it's called NBA HBCU Classic, not HBCU Classic presented by the NBA. And to some degree, by Major League Baseball with their Swingman Classic. At least it's called the HBCU Swingman Classic. I got a lot of thoughts about Major League Baseball beyond the HBCU deal that I've shared and that I will continue to share from a black perspective and the lack of, you want to know why in part in Major League Baseball, not to get off on a tangent and not to get off what we're talking about with respect to the National Football League and HBCUs, but you want to know why in part there's only 4%, it's up to what, 4.1% now in terms of HBCU or in terms of black players in Major League Baseball? Because you don't market Major League Baseball, you don't market to the black community. When's the last time you ran an ad in a black newspaper or in a black entity? When's the last time you did that? You know what I mean? It's like so many things that Major League Baseball could do to stop this narrative, and it doesn't do it. So it's just content with the narrative. Forget about Major League Baseball. We're not talking about Major League Baseball right now. Okay? You've got these one-off events, you know, and all of those kind of things. But you know what? You're not fooling real HBCU people. Like, you're not fooling real HBCU people knowing that you want to tie your name to the HBCU brand. You're not fooling real HBCU people. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm good with all the PR pushes and trying to attach your name to HBCUs and all that. Do something real. You know what I mean? Like, okay, and let me say this. Like Arthur Blank of the Atlanta Falcons, man, thumbs up. Puts his money where his mouth is. Supports the HBCUs right there in Atlanta. And there are other organizations that I'm sure do the same thing. I believe New Orleans does some stuff as well. And you should when you got that, you know, I'm just saying you don't have to. And I don't want to diss them because they've done a really good job. But, I mean, you've got four HBCUs right there in Atlanta. You've got, what, three or four also in New Orleans. So kudos to Arthur Blank and the Falcons and the Saints. Do a good job, and others. I'm sure there are others, but this isn't about individual teams. This is about the National Football League. And all of your PR pushes don't mean anything. How about maybe donating some money to the two HBCUs, right? Particularly maybe on a facilities level, right? Some of our facilities at our schools need some work. How about donating some money so we can get the facilities up? Since you say the talent isn't there, or at least the league is saying the talent isn't draftable, so maybe that'll get the talent up so players can get drafted. It's a recruiting mechanism when you have top notch facilities. Maybe the league should consider doing something like that, you know, to kind of get it up. You know what I mean? Endow scholarships. I mean, there's you know, I'm just sick and tired of this not selecting HBCU players in the draft. And I'm just saying, do something else, National Football League. Okay? Do something else. Look, at the end of the day, I'm good with all of your PR pushes and all of those things that you're trying to make yourself look good. Because again, to somebody on the outside that's not in the HBCU sports world, it may, your legacy bowl may look good, and all these other, mainly the legacy bowl. But again, players aren't being drafted. So what are we talking about? Okay. Again, legacy bowl's great, but at the end of the day, the players are still not being drafted. Your thoughts? Hit me up via X at DWare1, at DWare1 on my personal X account, or at BoxToRow, BoxToRow. Back to a little bit of NBA talk before we get out of here. Jamal Murray is special, and he had two game-winning shots in game five, which sealed the deal for the Nuggets over the Lakers. And was it game two, either game two or three, when he had another game-winning shot? He hit that big shot over Anthony Davis's contest that of course propelled the Nuggets to that particular victory. And he's been unbelievable. And you know what's interesting, that until it was mentioned, I never really thought about, and even this year didn't make the All-Star team. Jamal Murray has never made an All-Star team, yet he may be the most important player to any team in the NBA. Jamal Murray may be the most important player to any team in the NBA. That includes LeBron to the Lakers. You don't have, I mean, obviously, maybe I could quantify that by saying the most, maybe not the singular play. In other words, I mean, I think Jamal Murray is of superstar status. He may not be on the level of a LeBron James or even Jokic on his own team, or Antetokounmpo or Durant or whoever you think may be the top players in the league, but he's just a tier below them. And he's much like what, in a way, in terms of winning, in other words, you can't do it without him, what Scottie Pippen was to Michael Jordan. Like, Mike didn't start winning championships until Scottie Pippen came along. And Mike would not have won championships had it not been for Scottie Pippen. Well, Jamal Murray is very, very similar. Let's go back a couple of years ago when it looked like the Nuggets were rocking and rolling. And then all of a sudden, Murray goes down. The Nuggets don't win. He doesn't play the next year. The Nuggets don't win. He comes back the next year. The Nuggets win. And now the Nuggets are in good position to defend their NBA title. I mean, this, and to have never made an All-Star game. So the way that the Hall of Fames and all of those different things work now, let's just say Murray doesn't make, and a lot of that is just because of the talent level, but Murray is really, really good. Like, he's special. Murray is special. Can you, I mean, I'd have to go back and look. Can you be in, and I know the Hall of Fame is way down the line, but let's just say Murray continues to be steady. Can you make the Pro Basketball or the Naismith Hall of Fame without never having been an All-Star? I mean, I guess, to me, it's about the eye test. Again, it's very convoluted in terms of these Hall of Fames and all of that. Everything is about more about numbers and metrics and all of those different kinds of things, instead of looking at what a player has done. And no NBA championship last year, if not for Murray. No competing for the NBA title for the Nuggets, if not for Murray. Look, I got to get ready to run. Thank you to Jonathan Hernandez, the head baseball coach at Bethune-Cookman, for joining us today here on the program. For more information on Box to Row, log on to our website, boxtorow.com. And always remember to support those that support. Yo, Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.